the assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, let's get right into the week of baseball that's been going on this week. We got starting with Monday. Framber Valdez of the Houston Astros, he's just been having a phenomenal season so far. He just pitched his 24th quality start of the season, which already broke a Houston Astros record a couple starts ago. But this time around, against the Detroit Tigers, he ended up pitching a complete game shutout. So he's just been having a phenomenal season, and it just keeps getting better. And it's just crazy how well the starting pitching of the Houston Astros just continues to dominate. They get Justin Verlander back tonight from the injured list, so it's going to get even better. Hell, Lance McCullers, he just had a phenomenal outing yesterday as well. So the Houston Astros pitching is probably tops in the league, right up there with the Dodgers and the Braves. And you can't really argue against the Mets either. Those are some really great starting pitching staffs right there. Then also on Monday night, Mike Trout extended his home run streak to 7 games straight, where he had at least one home run in it. So 7 games straight. But unfortunately, that ended Tuesday night. So he was unable to break the major league record. But he did hit 7 home runs straight, which is something he definitely needed, because his season has been, while it's been pretty solid, he's battled through some injuries. And, you know, the Angels, they have not been a competitive team since really like June, and that says a lot. Then on Tuesday night, Aaron Judge against the Boston Red Sox, he hit 2 more home runs to extend his home run lead to 57. Both of those home runs, by the way, ended up tying the game at 2 different points in the game, and the Yankees would end up going on to win. The Yankees seem to have finally found their groove yet again. I don't know if it's too little too late, because the Astros are, at this point, I would definitely take the Astros in a 7-game series. Obviously, it depends on how the playoffs turn out. But you know, if I were to pick between the Astros and the Yankees at this current point in time, I would say the Astros are the much better team in the AL as opposed to the Yankees. With the way the Yankees started the season off, I was pretty much riding high on them all the way up until the last month ish. They've pretty much fallen off the face of the earth, whereas the Astros have maintained consistency throughout. Then on Wednesday night, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., he became the youngest player to hit 100 home runs with the Toronto Blue Jays. So congratulations to him. But big congratulations to Adam Wainwright and Yadier Molina, starting pitcher and catcher of the St. Louis Cardinals. They started their 325th start together. Throughout their career, they both were drafted in the same year, so they both played many years with each other, and 325th start together is the most for any pitching catcher combination, which is basically, they call a battery, because the two of them, they basically are one, and they charge together. So Adam Wainwright and Yadier Molina, 325 starts, ended up getting the win that night as well. So congratulations to them. They both are journeymen through the game and still continue to dominate at a high level. And they're old dudes. They are considered the old dudes right now in the league. And then when you look at the playoff picture in baseball right now, currently the Astros hold a 13-game lead over the Mariners in the AL West. Then in the AL East, the Yankees hold a 6.5-game lead over the Toronto Blue Jays. And then in this AL Central, Cleveland Guardians hold a 3-game lead over the Chicago White Sox. And then moving over to the wild card spots, you've got the 3 teams in line for the wild card right now would be the Seattle Mariners, the Toronto Blue Jays, and the Tampa Bay Rays, with the Baltimore Orioles 4.5 games back. Then moving over to the NL, the National League West has already been won by the Dodgers, so they've already clinched their playoff spot, won their division, and they're riding high into the playoffs. The NL East right now, the Mets hold a one-game lead over the Braves, and then the NL Central, the St. Louis Cardinals hold a 7.5-game lead over the Milwaukee Brewers. Then in the wild card, right now the three top teams are the Atlanta Braves, the Philadelphia Phillies, and the San Diego Padres, with the Milwaukee Brewers trailing by a game and a half. So the playoff race is in full force right now, and only the Dodgers have clinched the playoff spot and their division at this current point in time. We also have a big boxing matchup this weekend. We have Canelo Alvarez versus Triple G. This is going to be part three of this trilogy. The first matchup a few years ago ended in a draw. And in my opinion, it was a it wasn't just me who thinks it was a controversial draw. When any fight ends in a draw, you really don't want it to end in a draw. So it's always going to be controversial. But in my opinion, Triple G won that one. And then in the second matchup, Alvarez won. And I think that was a good, I really think it could have gone either way in that one as well. But I think Alvarez got a few harder punches in than Triple G did. But I mean, as a boxing fan, just this matchup alone is always a great matchup just because the both of them match up so well against each other. They both have really strong hands. They both have really fast hands. They're both technically sound. They both have iron jaws. Neither one of them has ever been knocked out in their career in any of their losses. And Triple G has that beautiful uppercut. Canelo Alvarez is just known for the body shot knockouts. So both of the fighters, they're great. Since their last fight, it's been 4 years, and both of them have gone on to, you know, Triple G's won all of his matchups. Whereas Alvarez is coming off of that loss against Bivol, which was a very odd fight for him. But hey, you're not going to win them all when you fight as much as Canelo has fought. I respect both fighters greatly, and I'm looking forward to this third matchup between the two of them. I don't think either one will get knocked out because, like I said, neither one of them has been knocked out. Canelo Alvarez has only lost twice in his career. He lost to Mayweather and to Bivol, and both of those went to a decision. And then Triple G, his only loss is to Canelo Alvarez, the last matchup. And that was a decision as well. So neither of them are known for getting knocked out, so I don't really foresee a knockout in this. I think it would be very shocking if one of them were to get knocked out. It would definitely make it an interesting fight, that's for damn sure. But, I mean, I expect this to be an excellent fight. I expect it to go the distance. And I hesitate, you know, because right off the bat, I want to take Alvarez just because I don't really see him losing two fights in a row. He didn't get his ass kicked in the Bivol fight, but he definitely was surprised. You could tell he really was not expecting what Bivol brought to him. And that, like I said, that's going to happen because Canelo is really different than most fighters these days. You know, most fighters will take a fight here and there. They usually will fight once or twice in a year, whereas Canelo, he's fighting regularly. Every few months, Canelo is getting ready for his next fight. And you really got to respect that. Now, he does have a huge contract with DAZN that he's got to live up to, which plays a part. But, I mean, I really just respect that he gets right back into it. Whether he wins or loses, no matter who his opponent is, he is ready to get back into the ring. I imagine as soon as Saturday night is over, regardless of what the end result ends up being, his next fight is going to be starting to get planned out, and they will probably be announcing it within the next couple of weeks. So that's what I really respect about him. And then Triple G is just an excellent fighter. So like I said, I really hesitate to take Alvarez in this one, but I am taking him. But the reason why I hesitate is because so far, everybody's taken Alvarez. And when that happens, it's usually a bad thing for the one who everybody is on. You know, Triple G is nobody to sleep on. He's a great boxer. He's been a great boxer his entire career, as has Alvarez. But I could see something like that really motivating him, really giving him a little extra oomph. And I would not be shocked to see Triple G pull out the upset in this one, but I am going to go with Alvarez hesitantly because of just how favored he is in this matchup. But regardless, it should be a great matchup. And if you're a boxing fan, or even if you're just like a light boxing fan, if you're wondering what would be a good fight to watch, this is going to be a great fight to watch. Just two excellent boxers. Two guys who definitely have made their mark in boxing. They're both great fighters, technically sound, beautiful hands. So if you're just even like a casual boxing fan, this is going to be a great fight. And then moving on, there was a little bit of NBA news this week. Nothing with players. But Robert Sarver, the Phoenix Suns owner, he's been under investigation for the last like year and a half-ish by the NBA for basically just discrimination in the workplace. Apparently, he has said some very weird things to women, sexualized things. He's told pregnant women that they can't work for him. He's just made lots of comments like that. Then he's also, apparently used the N-word in certain instances, not necessarily, calling people the N-word, but basically kind of like mimicking people using the N-word. So not justifying it, whatever, but I'm just kind of trying to explain, that he's not like just walking up to black people and saying, you're an N-word. No, he's saying it, but he's not using it in a certain context, if you will. But regardless, the investigation has now been completed, and they've decided to give him a one-year suspension and a $10 million fine. I don't think it's really a harsh penalty. I mean, for a billionaire, which is what Robert Sarver is, $10 million really isn't much. So that's not that big of a deal. And then 1 year, I mean, he's still going to be running the team. He's got other people running the team who will be reporting to him. So it's not really a big deal. Obviously, this screams shades of what's going on in Washington with the Redskins football team Commanders and their owner Daniel Snyder. Basically, screams shades of that. This kind of shit happens all the time, not just in sports, but just in general life. Once again, not justifying it, just pointing out the truth and the facts of life. A lot of NBA players, you know, LeBron's come out, said the punishment's not harsh enough. Even Chris Paul, who plays for the Suns, has said the punishment's not harsh enough. And a lot of people are coming out saying, well, you know, what's his face, who used to own the Clippers, Donald Sterling. He lost the Clippers a few years ago. They took his team away. But I mean, the major difference is that they don't actually have Robert Sarver on tape or on video, or really, it's really just he says, she says stuff. And I mean, really, when it's all said and done, first of all, I don't know if a lot of you realize this, but the commissioner of all leagues, it doesn't matter what sport we're discussing, but the commissioner of every single league actually represents the owners. They are the mouthpiece and the face for the owners. So the owners don't have to take, if there's any negative blowback for any type of decisions, it all usually goes on to the commissioner. And that's what the commissioner is there for. They are served as a mouthpiece, and they're also served as the battering board when things go bad. That's why they get paid all that money. So a lot of people are kind of mad at the commissioner, Adam Silver, and it's just like, well, Adam Silver really doesn't have power. The owners have all the power. And if the owners deem that they don't want to take away the team from Sarver, they're not going to. And I agree with that. They shouldn't take it away from him just because they're really, it is just he says, she says. And while the evidence is great against him, just imagine if you owned a business or you owned a company and some person just started saying things about you. It doesn't mean it's true. It doesn't mean it's not true. But do you deserve to have your business taken away from you just because people are saying things? He is being punished. Like I said, it's not a major punishment, especially for billionaires. But really, what billionaire actually gets punished? I mean, our entire country is ran by politicians, and they're all creepy scumbag losers who are the bottom of the barrel pieces of shit, who have done tons of horrifying things, and all you idiots still run out and elect them for whatever stupid, idiotic positions that are out there. So, I mean, that's what our entire country is ran by, a bunch of scum lords. So it's not shocking that billionaires who own sports teams are allowed to get away with treating people like shit. But like I said, I don't think he deserves to outright lose his team like Donald Sterling did, because the difference is with Donald Sterling is not only did we have the recording with his girlfriend of him telling his girlfriend to not be seen in photographs with black people. Newsflash, she was black too, which was just completely hilarious. But, you know, racists, they don't ever make sense. But there was also the fact that he used to own apartment buildings and he would purposely do things to not rent out to black people. So there was an actual long history of racism from this guy that was like in paperwork, in recordings. And then I also have a feeling that he might have had some rifts with owners. And those are the only people who can really ultimately take the team away from him. So unless other owners are saying, dude, you need to resign, kind of like when the Carolina Panthers owner, I want to say it was like, what, three, 4 years ago now, their previous owner, there was a whole avalanche of stories about to come out about him. And what happened was, is all the owners of the NFL told him, yo, dude, this is not going to look good for any of us. You need to resign. And what did he do? He resigned immediately and sold the team. So when the owners are against you and you can't beat the owners, that's the only way that team is getting taken away from him. So my feeling is that Robert Sarver just has, he has more support from other owners who don't want to take his team away from him. And that's why he did not lose his team. Now there is a possibility it could still happen because, you know, like I said, LeBron James has come out and said, he disagrees with the ruling, and same with Chris Paul, a guy who plays for him, but it's not like the players can do anything. They can say, oh, I'm not going to play for you. But I mean, really at this rate, who cares? Chris Paul is old, and if he wants to push Chris Paul to the side, then he could push Chris Paul to the side. I mean, he'll still own the team. So it's not like, the owner cares, and it's not like the other owners care either. They can say all the bullshit and give you all the lip service they want, but they really don't give a goddamn, straight up. So that's that. I don't really, you know, also, I guess one of the other co-owners came out last night and is asking for Robert Sarver to step down. So maybe that would be a little bit more. But like I said, nothing is going to happen unless the other owners start putting pressure on it. And at this point, I don't really see that happening. And even if it does, if you think this isn't happening on other teams throughout all sports and all other companies and just the world in general, you're a moron and you need to get a grip. Anyways, let's move on to football, shall we? Last night we had a great Thursday night football game between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Los Angeles Chargers. The Chiefs ended up getting the win 27-24. Justin Herbert's ending stat line ended up being 33 for 48 with 334 yards and three touchdowns. Patrick Mahomes also had another great night with 24 for 35, 235 yards and two touchdowns. And, I mean, the first half was really dominated by the Chargers. It looked like the Chargers were ready to finally do what I said, get over the hump and finally become that team that's able to dominate and win their division. And I still believe they are. But, you know, the first half, they came right out. They looked really solid on both offensively and defensively. They were taking care of business. You know, the Chiefs had one really solid drive in the first half. But other than that, they looked very under control for the most part. And it looked like, man, going into halftime, the Chargers had this in the bag. Then they come out and the Chargers do, actually the Chiefs come out, they score, and, then all of a sudden it's a really close game and it's going back and forth and the Chargers are driving. And the big turning point in this game was the Chargers were in, I believe this was in the third quarter, might've been the fourth quarter, but it was definitely the second half. And the Chargers were driving. It looked like they were about to score a touchdown. And Justin Herbert just throws a pass that he's not expecting the cornerback to just cut right off. Cornerback cuts it off and takes it 99 yards to the house. And that's where I believe was the turning point of the game. And the Chargers were just never able to regain control. Basically, the Chiefs won it from there. Also of note, on I want to say it was the second to last drive, late in the fourth quarter, Justin Herbert took a really huge hit. It looks like he hurt his ribs. Not sure if he broke them or if they're just like bruised or whatever, but it looked like it hurt the shit out of him. Now, I got to say, give it up to Justin Herbert. Motherfucker, he was hurting. You could tell with every pass, he was hurting. But he still had zip on it. He still took his team down the field, drove them down the field, and they scored a freaking touchdown. And they didn't get the win. But I was like, damn, what a man. It would be so, like, when I see shit like this as a Cowboys fan, it's usually disheartening because, like, I always sit there and I'm like, wouldn't it be nice if our quarterback could fucking do something like that? Instead, Dak Prescott hurts his fucking thumb, and that dude's got to get his nails done while Justin Herbert's out here like a man and just playing each and every drive in immense pain and takes his team down the field and still scores. Now, I hate to minimize Dak Prescott's injury. Obviously, I understand it's not just a little tiny broken thumb. It's a big injury. But I'm a Cowboys fan, and I'm pissed off at how shitty they're doing. So I just that's usually what I think as I'm watching games these days. When I see two great quarterbacks like Justin Herbert and Patrick Mahomes going back and forth and making these great, amazing plays, and I'm like, man. That must be so awesome to have a fucking team that actually wins. I wouldn't fucking know what that's like. But anyways, I digress. So the Chiefs ended up winning the game. It was a great game between both really good teams. And hey, the Chiefs are 2-0. Chargers are 1-1. And we'll see what happens with Justin Herbert. Looks like it definitely is a rib injury. I haven't seen anything scroll across the screen about injury report or anything, so we'll see what happens with him. But I imagine since he played the rest of the game last night that he's probably not going to miss too much time. All right, so let's get into the rest of the week two matchups for the week, starting with the New York Jets at the Cleveland Browns. Right now, the Browns are a 6.5-point favorite. The Jets still will not have Zach Wilson at quarterback. They'll have Joe Flacco starting this week. And overall, the Jets, they're still finding their way. I think even if they had Zach Wilson, they were still going to have their struggles. Cleveland Browns, not a very good team either, but I think they're a better team than the Jets. So I think they'll get the win this weekend, 24-10. Then we have the Washington Redskins football team Commanders at the Detroit Lions. Right now, the Detroit Lions are a 1.5-point favorite, which is the first time in many years that the Lions are actually a favorite for once. So that says a lot about the Commanders. But I actually am going with Detroit in this one. I always hesitate to take Detroit. That's why they're never favored, because everybody hesitates to take Detroit. Usually when you do take Detroit, that's when they fucking lose. But I do think they are going to get the win this week. Washington, I don't expect them to be a very good team this year. I kind of expect them to have a roller coaster season where they win one, lose one, win one, lose one. And since they won last week, I really expect them to come into Detroit and lose. Detroit really started to pick it up in the second half of last week's game, so I kind of expect them to carry that on into this week's game, and I expect Detroit to get the win 28-17. Then we have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the New Orleans Saints. Right now, the Buccaneers are a 3.5-point favorite. The New Orleans Saints really have owned the Buccaneers in the regular season. Their only matchup in the playoffs a couple years ago, that's when the Buccaneers beat them. But other than that, the Saints have had their numbers. Now, this is a division matchup, division matchups are always weird. No matter how good or bad the teams are, they are always weird matchups. Anything can happen. So I do expect this to be a back-and-forth battle. I actually expect it to be more of a defensive battle than an offensive battle. I kind of see this being like a turnover type of game. But I do expect the Buccaneers to get the better of the Saints in a 21-20 Tampa Bay Buccaneers win. Then we have the Carolina Panthers versus the New York Giants. Right now, the Giants are a 2.5-point favorite. And this is a weird matchup for me, too. I think it's a coin toss. I could see either team winning this one. I'm leaning towards the Giants just because they are coming off of that really big, surprising win last week against the Titans, whereas the Panthers are coming off of a heartbreaking loss. And I just kind of see the Giants just doing just enough to beat the Carolina Panthers in this one, 20-17. Then we have the New England Patriots at the Pittsburgh Steelers. I am calling this one the ugly game of the week. Right now, the Patriots are a 1.5-point favorite. Both teams are very mediocre offensively. I mean, this has got to be one of the worst Patriot teams in Bill Belichick's entire coaching history. The offense is, I don't know what is going on there. And the defense is very shaky. Then you look over at Pittsburgh and their offense is just as shaky. I think they're slightly better on the offensive side of the ball, but not by much. I mean, the Pittsburgh offensive line is just atrocious. And so I expect whoever to be playing at quarterback for the Steelers at any point in this season to have a very difficult time getting the ball off. I also expect it to be a very difficult season for Najee Harris to even stay healthy because he's already injured and that line's not going to be helping him out either. But defensively, the Steelers are still the typical Steelers. Even with T.J. Watt out, the secondary is definitely one of the best in the league. Their front seven is still lights out without T.J. Watt. So I expect this to be a very ugly defensive game with maybe one, possibly two touchdowns being scored in this one. I see it being more of one of those field goal back and forth type of games where I've got the Pittsburgh Steelers winning 13-7. Then we've got the Indianapolis Colts at the Jacksonville Jaguars. Right now, the Colts are a 4.5-point favorite. The Colts are coming off of that horrible tie last week. I think they started off the game very slow, but then started to get it going in the second half. Jacksonville actually played a very good game against the Commanders last week. It's just they weren't able to hold it together in the fourth quarter. I still think Jacksonville has some growing pains to work through. While the Colts do as well, I think the Colts are just the overall better team at this current point in time. So I have the Colts winning 30-21. Then rounding out the early games, we've got the Miami Dolphins at the Baltimore Ravens. Currently, the Ravens are a 3.5-point favorite. Usually the Dolphins actually play the Ravens pretty well. The Ravens, their ground attack's looking really solid. Lamar Jackson looks really good and on point. He just doesn't have a lot to choose from in the receiving core. But then defensively, this looks to be typical Baltimore Ravens defense. And then on the Dolphins side of the ball, you know, you've got them, with all their weapons offensively. And then their defense is pretty shaky, and so that's where I think the edge is going to be. I just think Lamar Jackson's going to have a really solid day, and he's going to get the better of the Miami Dolphins defense. And I've got Baltimore winning a close one, 24-17. Then moving on to the afternoon games, we have the Atlanta Falcons at the Los Angeles Rams. Right now, the Rams are an 11.5-point favorite, and that's not surprising to me. I think the Rams are coming off of a big loss against the Bills. Poor taste in their mouth, and so I think they're going to come out, and I think they're going to absolutely dominate the Falcons. The Falcons, I don't expect to be a good team at all this year, and I expect them to get demolished 35-10 in this one. Then you've got the Seattle Seahawks at the San Francisco 49ers. Currently, the 49ers are an 8.5-point favorite, which I think is very odd because this is a division matchup, and while I don't think the Seahawks are a good team at all, this is still a division matchup, and the 49ers didn't show at least on the offensive side of the ball, that they're that great of a team. Defensively, they still got it going on, and I think that's definitely going to be what carries them through this game. But offensively, there's still a lot of questions going on there. Seattle, I don't think is a good team. I really think last week's win was more of a fluke than anything. And so I've got the 49ers winning this one 17-7, but I expect it to be a close battle just because Seattle actually owns the 49ers and Kyle Shanahan over the last like 4 years now. And actually, I think it's a little bit longer than that. I think if I recall, I was watching something the other day, and I seem to recall the stat that since Russell Wilson took over, the Seahawks are like 14-4 against the 49ers or something crazy like that. I was very shocked at the statistics. So the Seahawks actually have the Niners number, but I am leaning towards the Niners in this matchup. Then you've got the Cincinnati Bengals at my Dallas Cowboys. Right now, the Cowboys are a 2.5-point favorite. Wow. I had to really double take that one. I did print this out a couple days ago, so maybe that chain has changed. But the Cowboys are a 2.5-point favorite. That's odd. They're just getting the home field advantage, I guess. While Cincinnati did not play a good game last week, that was a division matchup against the Steelers. As I continue to reiterate, division matchups are a big deal. It's always a weird matchup when you play a division team. But I still think the Bengals are a better team than the Cowboys. I mean, the Cowboys' defense looks really good. Even if we had Dak Prescott, though, I would still be shocked that we're a favorite, just because offensively the Cowboys didn't show shit last week. Now, I am a Cowboys fan, and I never pick against my team. I never root against my team. I always have to take my team. So you're always going to hear a diluted pick from me when it comes to the Cowboys this year. Sorry, it's just going to happen. It's just who I am. I'm a loyal motherfucker. I can never, ever pick against my teams, even though I could criticize them, because believe me, I've got a top five today for you Cowboys haters that you're just going to be laughing so hard at. It was great to put together, if you can't hear the sarcasm there. But yeah, I can't. I still ride or die for my Cowboys. I'm Cowboys for life. So I do have my Cowboys winning this game 20-17. Even though I know chances are they're probably going to get their asses beat in this one. Moving on to the next matchup, we've got the Houston Texans at the Denver Broncos. Right now, the Broncos are a 10.5-point favorite, and that sounds about right, just because I think the Denver Broncos are, you know, last week they couldn't really get it going offensively. You know, this is the first year with Russell Wilson. This is the first year with their coach Nathaniel Hackett. And also, last week was a very pressurized game going to Seattle. Russell Wilson's first time playing in Seattle, not in a Seattle Seahawks uniform. So obviously, there was a lot of pressure on them last week. So I expect them to bounce back hard this week. I don't think the Texans are a good team at all, even though they played the Colts well. But what have I just continued to say? That was a division matchup last week against the Colts, so division matchups are always weird. But I do expect the Broncos to bounce back big this week and win 38-10. Then you've got the Arizona Cardinals at the Las Vegas Raiders. Right now, the Raiders are a 3.5-point favorite. And the Cardinals, man, I expect their season to be up and down. I still have them as a playoff contender. I still think they're a pretty solid team, but I just think they're going to have their moments because they haven't shown that they're a legit team just yet. The Raiders haven't either, but this is their home opener. Their offense really started to spark towards the end of last week's game, and I think they're just going to roll down that over into this game, and I think the Vegas Raiders are going to get the win 27-17. And then the Sunday night game is the Chicago Bears at the Green Bay Packers. Right now, the Packers are a 9.5-point favorite. The Bears did get a big win last week, but I think that's probably going to be their last win for a little bit of time right now. Green Bay got demolished last week against the Vikings, but I think that was more a fluky instance. Also, I mean, Green Bay's got a lot of new receivers, so they still have to get their rep going with Aaron Rodgers. I think they will get it right this week, and I think the Green Bay Packers will win big 31-10. So as I mentioned, we do have a top five list this week. I know it's been a few weeks, and it may even be about a month since I've done a top five list, just because, you know, football season started. So now I don't really have to find time filling things to do, but don't think I've neglected my top five lists or top 10 lists. It depends on what the topic is. But this week I have a doozy for you. Like I said, you Cowboys haters are going to love it. Cause you know, as a Cowboys fan, it's just the team is so fucking pathetic, and we always get our hopes up. It's like the off season, we were just like, all right, cool. We haven't lost anything yet. We've got hope. We've got faith. And then game one happens, and then all of our dreams begin to get dashed. And it just has been happening since like 1996 at this rate. You would think we would just be used to it. But being a Cowboys fan is like being in an extremely abusive relationship. You just keep getting punched in the face every Sunday, and we just keep coming back for more. As you could tell, I mean, the Cowboys are the biggest brand in sports, in all of sports, in the entire fucking world. They're worth the most, more than any franchise on the face of this planet. The Cowboys are worth the most, and this motherfucking team hasn't won shit for years. So, you know, us fans are actually worth more. We've we're the reason why they're a brand, not the fucking shit they've been putting on the field since 1996 and on. But so with the way this season started, you know, with that horrible showing on offense and then Dak Prescott getting injured right off the bat, and now he's going to be out for God knows how long, at least the next month or so. I thought it would be hilarious to do the drop five Dallas Cowboys dumpster fire seasons, because, you know, when I did research for this, oh my God, it was really actually hard to pick which ones, like, to actually go through, because since like 96, man, this team, they're trash. They're a fucking dumpster fire. And then when we put it in perspective, like when I actually did the research and like just looked at each and every season since 96, I'm just like, Jesus Christ, we suck. I mean, if you're a Cowboys fan, don't do the research I just did. It's very fucking depressing because you're like, wow, we suck. I mean, everybody likes to like relive all these years. Like we like to talk about Bill Parcells, and it's like, dude, he was our coach for 4 fucking years. And we made the playoffs 2 years, but really only 1 year was like a good year. The rest of the years were like, we were barely fucking 500. I mean, the only thing Bill Parcells did for us was draft right. Other than that, that motherfucker left us high and dry and screwed us out of Sean Payton as our future coach. And then you look at the Tony Romo years, all you Tony Romo lovers who always like to create all the fucking excuses in the world as to why that loser never won shit. Man, God, those years we had such great fucking weapons and we did so many crazy things, but man, we had like fucking 4-5 years in a row where we went 8-8 every fucking year. Like, what the hell is wrong with this loser ass team? And then there were those other seasons where we didn't have any quarterback. We had like Quincy Carter and Vinny Testaverde and Drew Bledsoe, and it's like, God damn, what is wrong with this team? And we've had such stupid seasons where it's like you come in and they're going to be a Super Bowl champion, and they come right out the gate and just shit the fucking bed and have just an absolutely atrocious season. So it was really actually difficult to figure out which 5 seasons were the worst. Now, I did only go from like my lifetime. So one of these seasons on here, I'm just going to spoil it for you. I'm not going to tell you where it's at right now, but it's the 1989 season. It's by far the worst Cowboy season of all time. I was only like 4 years old then, so I don't really remember that season, but it's on the list just because you couldn't not put it on there. But basically, the time frame I used was from 89 until now. Now, obviously, none of these are the 90s teams. You know why? Because they were actually good. I actually won shit. All right, so let's get right into this just hilarious top five, the top five Dallas Cowboys dumpster fire seasons. Starting off with the number 5 was the 2004 season. We went 6-10. This was Bill Parcells' second year as coach. In the 2003 season, we're coming off of a 10-6 season where we lost in the wild card playoffs. So you're looking at it like, you know, that year we had Quincy Carter in 2003 when we went to the wild card playoffs. So you're thinking to yourself, oh my God, all right, we got us a quarterback, we got us a coach, we got us a pretty decent team. You know, they were making some moves in the offseason. They traded for Keyshawn Johnson. That was the year we drafted Julius Jones. So we were building a decent squad. And so you're looking at it like, all right, the Cowboys, they got to be at least a playoff team this year. Well, it starts the season off with Quincy Carter failing a drug test. And he was released by the Cowboys right as training camp began. Now, there's always been a lot of, there isn't a legit story about this, but basically what happened was, is Quincy Carter had actually failed a couple drug tests before. So he was already on shaky ice with the NFL. And if you fail drug tests, you actually get randomly drug tested and blah, blah, blah. So the Cowboys actually started doing their own drug tests with him to kind of get ahead of the game and make sure he was keeping his nose clean. Well, good old Quincy Carter was not keeping his nose clean. And he failed a drug test for cocaine, and they released him right on site. And so that's how our season started. So then we trade for Vinny. I can't remember if we traded for him or we just signed him. But then we picked up Vinny Testaverde, the 900-year-old quarterback. Now, Testaverde, he had his decent years and all that. And, but I mean, at this current point in time, he was washed up as fuck. So this season, the Cowboys started 2-1, and it went downhill from there. Like I said, they ended up with a 6-10 record. So as you could tell, it was not a good season. It wasn't even an up and down season. It was more like lose three games, then win one game. Lose three games, win one game. So it was an absolutely atrocious game, or I mean season, and it just started off atrociously when you really expected it to be at least a competitive season, and ended up a 6-10 season. One of the loser Bill Parcells years. Oh, by the way, I saw the Cowboys this season, as a matter of fact. Now, I lived in Reno at the time, and the first game I ever saw in my entire life that I went to was in Oakland. It was a Dallas Cowboys versus Oakland Raiders preseason game. And I know a lot of people, they like to give Oakland Raiders fans this, like, reputation as they're, like, really scary and you don't want to mess with them. Yeah, they didn't do shit. As a matter of fact, it was a pleasant experience. The Cowboys actually won that game, which was very shocking. It was actually Tony Romo's very first game because it was his rookie season. And so he didn't play the whole game. He just came in, I think, in the third quarter. But regardless, he got a game-winning drive. And so the Cowboys won that preseason game. But the rest of the season was just downhill from there. Then at number four on my top five Dallas Cowboys dumpster fire seasons is the 2012 season. The Cowboys ended up going 8-8 that year. This was Jason Garrett's second full year as the coach. It was a very up and down season. This roster had Tony Romo, Dez Bryant, DeMarco Murray, DeMarcus Ware, Jason Witten. So a really stacked offense, a pretty good defense as well. The season was completely up and down. They either barely won the games that they won, or they got their asses kicked. There was one game in particular against the Chicago Bears in which Tony Romo had a whopping 5 interceptions. Then there was also a season where we figured out how horrible at clock management Jason Garrett was. Most notably, there was like a Baltimore Ravens game that we completely shit the bed in where we had like the lead, and then Jason Garrett and his horrible clock management ended up costing us the game. And then, you know, we ended up 8-8 to end the season. But even though we were that shitty, we actually had a chance to make the playoffs. And going into the last game against the Washington Redskins, we lost the game, and that was our third year with no playoffs. Oh, also, by the way, in 2012, I got to see them lose to the Redskins on Thanksgiving Day. That was fucking awesome. Yeah, I got to see them lose Thanksgiving Day. Redskins, fuck off. All right, so number three on my top five Dallas Cowboys dumpster fire seasons would be the 2010 season. The Cowboys went 6-10 that year. The reason why the 2010 season was such a disappointment is because in 2009, they went to the division round in the playoffs, and they lost to the Vikings. So you're kind of looking at that like, oh my God, the Cowboys have something to build off of. We could potentially be a Super Bowl team this next year. And wrong. Nope. Here's what happened with the Cowboys that year. By the way, their roster was just as good to start. You know, they had Romo, Dez, DeMarco, Ware, Witten, those last guys that I just mentioned, but they started the season off 1-7. Yeah, 1-7. Isn't that fucking awesome? Oh my God. That was the year Wade Phillips got fired. Yeah, after they lost that game to Green Bay, they got completely demolished in Green Bay, and they fired him and then put Jason Garrett in as the interim coach. And so, yeah. And then also in this same exact season, in week 7, Tony Romo, he got injured against the New York Giants and then was gone for the rest of the season. So just when we think, oh my God, we got rid of Wade Phillips and hopefully we could get this going. No. We're stuck with John Kitna at quarterback for the rest of the year. And that's how the 2010 season went. It was a doozy, man. It was great. It was real fucking great being a Cowboys fan. That year, I got to see them lose to the New Orleans Saints on Thanksgiving Day. Yeah, it was awesome. I was up really, really high. I think this is actually the first year of the new stadium. It's either the first or second year, but regardless, I was up really, really high. We were in like almost the last row. So the whole way down, walking down this hallway, the whole way down after I got to watch the Cowboys get demolished on Thanksgiving, we got to hear that goddamn who dat gonna beat them Saints chant the whole fucking way down. The whole fucking walk down. That's what I had to hear. It was awesome. It was awesome. All right. And number two on my top five Dallas Cowboy dumpster fire seasons, the 2015 season. The 2015 season. Now, this was a really, really awful season. It's really kind of like seared in my head because it was so awful. So first of all, the reason why this season was that it was actually supposed to be a good season coming into it because, you know, the Cowboys in 2014, they lost the divisional round of the playoffs. So once again, you know, when your team gets to the divisional round, hell, when your team gets to the playoffs, even though they lose, that's usually a good starting point. You look at that and you go, we've got something to build off of. And usually you take that into next season and hopefully you go to the championship game or the Super Bowl and you win it all. That's always the mindset of every single fan, every coach, every player, every team. You make the playoffs the season before, you should be competitive the next year. Doesn't always work out that way, but that's the mindset. So this season ended at 4-12. So obviously we did not make the playoffs. This was the fifth season of the horrifying Jason Garrett regime. We started out 2-0. You're thinking, oh my God, Cowboys looking really fucking good. And then they lost 7 in a row after that. And then in their final 14 games, they went 2-12. Now there is a reason why this happened. In week one, Dez Bryant got injured. He broke his foot and he would be out for 8 to 10 weeks. By the way, this is basically the same roster as I've mentioned before, the Romo, Dez. It wasn't DeMarco Murray as a running back. As a matter of fact, in the 2010 season, that was Marion Barber as well, no, not DeMarco Murray. But in the 2015 season, that was that DeMarco Murray or Marion Barber? Fuck, I can't remember. I didn't write it down. Regardless, this was a stacked offense. Coming right in, we had we had Romo, Dez, Witten, DeMarcus, all the good fucking players. And so week one, Dez gets injured, breaks his foot. He's out 8 to 10 weeks. Oh, that's fucking awful. Then in week two, Tony Romo, he gets injured again. I think this is the one where he broke his clavicle. Either way, he broke his collarbone in one, broke his clavicle in another one. This year, he broke it in week two. And so that's why this season ended up being a dumpster fire, because we lost two of our biggest offensive weapons right off the bat. Isn't that awesome? Isn't that awesome? And then, then we would just go back and forth with all these shitty fucking quarterbacks. Oh, also this season as well. I went to the Cowboys game. Yeah, I went and saw them lose to the New England Patriots. Yeah. I actually had really good seats for this one. My friend Megan, she's a big Patriots fan. And when I first moved to Texas in 2007, we used to work at a Texas Longhorn store in the mall together, and we would always talk football. She's a Patriots fan. I'm a Cowboys fan. We're like, if the Patriots ever come to Dallas, we are going to that game. So in 2015, that was the first time the Patriots had come to Dallas since I had moved here. So I knew when we had bought the tickets, before the season started. So none of these injuries had happened. But I knew going to that game, it was going to be a shit show. And it did end up being a shit show. The Cowboys, I think, only scored 6 points in that game. But hey, I got to see Tom Brady. That's about all I can say. But I did. I had pretty good seats in that one. I was behind the field goal post in that one. So that was pretty cool. I got to see Tom Brady. I was sitting next to some other Patriots fans. So I was there with a Patriots fan and then had like four other Patriots fans next to me from Boston, by the way. And all talking shit to me. So it was a great fucking time. Actually, it wasn't that bad. I've mentioned this before. Getting to go to a game to me is a very fortunate and privileged thing to do here in America, because there are countries, most notably in the Middle East, where women aren't even allowed to attend sporting events. So I, even when my team loses, I am happy to be going to a game. Even people in this country have never been able to even dream about going to a game. So going to a game, even when my team gets their ass beat, I'm still very fortunate to do so. Then at number one on my top five Dallas Cowboys dumpster fire seasons would be the 1989 season. By the way, that 2015 season I just mentioned at number two, where they went 4-12, that was their worst season since this 1989 season. Go Cowboys! So in 1989, they went 1-15. Now, this was a rebuilding team. You know, Jerry Jones had just bought the team. He just fired the legendary Tom Landry. He hired Jimmy Johnson. So this was Jimmy Johnson's first season. They just drafted Troy Aikman as the first overall pick as quarterback. They just drafted Michael Irvin the season before. So this team had a lot of rebuilding to do, which is why they were so awful. But basically, Troy Aikman didn't get one win in his rookie season. In the first game of the season, he actually, I think, coincidentally, broke his thumb, just like Dak did. And he was out a couple games, I think I want to say two, three, maybe four games after that. And then he came back and played the rest of the season. But Troy Aikman didn't get one win in his rookie season. Which says a lot because he actually used to be one of the most winning quarterbacks of all time until Tom Brady came around and demolished all of those records. But with the way Aikman's career ended up, he's one of the most winning quarterbacks of all time, and he didn't get one win in his rookie season in 1989. As a matter of fact, their only win came against the Washington Redskins. So, haha, motherfuckers, you are our only win that season. And this was also the year where the Cowboys infamously traded Herschel Walker away to the Minnesota Vikings, in which they were able to get a shit ton of draft picks and players in return for Herschel Walker, and we would go on to be one of the greatest dynasties of all time. And that was the last time the Cowboys were one of the worst teams in the league in 1989, and then they would go on to be one of the best teams in the league, and then they would go on to be one of the biggest fucking laughing stocks in the league. And now that I think about all the times I've gone to see the Cowboys play in person, I don't think I've ever seen them win here in Texas. As I mentioned, my first game I went to see them play was in Oakland against the Raiders. That was a preseason game. They did win that one. It was a close one. Then the following year, I went to actually go see the Cowboys in a regular season game play the San Francisco 49ers in Candlestick Park, by the way. It wasn't called Candlestick at the time. I think it was called like Monster Stadium or whatever they called it at the time, but it was Candlestick. Anybody who's from that area or is in that general vicinity, we all call it Candlestick. Go fuck yourself if you get a problem with it. So I did go see them play the Niners there. That was the year Drew Bledsoe was the starting quarterback. And they did get the win that game, too. It was a close win, but they got the win then. Then I remember the year before I moved here, I want to say like 2006 it was. Might have been 05. But I saw the Cowboys play at the old Texas Stadium, a Monday night game against the New York Giants. It was the game where Tony Romo actually took over for Drew Bledsoe. I had good seats for that one too. Such good seats where I was in the end zone where Drew Bledsoe, he steps back to pass and just gets sacked right in the end zone. So I got a really up close and personal shot at that shit. And then Bill Parcells benched him at halftime and put Tony Romo in. And then that began the Tony Romo era. And then the year after, I think it was the first year I moved here, we went and saw the Cowboys play the Eagles in Old Texas Stadium, another Monday night game. Where the Cowboys lost again to the Eagles. That one was actually the famous one where DeSean Jackson, when he played for the Eagles, that was the one where he was running. He had a clear shot at the end zone and started celebrating right at like the 1 yard line. He drops the ball and didn't get the touchdown, but still they got the win, so it didn't matter. So that was the next time I saw them. Then after that, I think was when I went to go see them play the New Orleans Saints on Thanksgiving. And that was at the new stadium now. And then I went to go see them, and they lost that one, of course. You know, when I was telling you, I got to walk all the way down and get to hear that awesome Who Dat fucking chant the whole fucking way down. And then I think it was either the year after that, or 2 years later, then I went and saw them lose again on Thanksgiving to the Washington Redskins. And then I got to see them get demolished by the New England Patriots in 2015. And that is the last time I've gone to see the Cowboys. Because, like I said, now that I actually think about it and put it in perspective like that, I've never seen the Cowboys win here in Texas. And so it seems to be a waste of money to, because first of all, living in Austin, the drive to Dallas just flat out sucks. I don't know why, but it just sucks. So that's the first drawback of driving to Dallas. The second is you don't know what you're going to get with the Cowboys. Even when they're a good fucking team, you still don't know what the hell this stupid team's going to put out there. So why spend my money when I could just watch them lose at home, right? So yeah, that's my top five this week. I hope you Dallas Cowboys haters loved that, because I'm sure you fucking did. And I'm sorry to all my Dallas Cowboys fans, but honestly, all we can do is just laugh, because you know, while it's only week one and we still got a lot of season to go, we could still make the playoffs, we could still do something, but I mean, come on. That game one was so typical Cowboys. And like I said, if you actually do the research that I just did the other night and look at from 96 until now, and you just look at the patheticness in front of your face, you just go, God damn, this team sucks. So it's hard to have any positive outlook on the rest of the season, but hey, I'm still going to be rooting for my boys. I'm still going to be buying more and more gear. I'm still going to be rooting for them every week. I'm still going to be breaking them down. So, hey, still a fan, once a fan, always a fan. Just going to get punched in the face every single fucking week like I'm Tina Turner. All right, everybody. So enjoy your weekend of sports. And hopefully on Monday I haven't killed myself as a Cowboys fan. Oh, wait, I don't need to do that. You know why? Because I already know. I already know what to expect from those losers. Maybe I'll have died from excitement because they'll actually have a good game. I know that's just very laughable, but hey, all I can do as a Cowboys fan is laugh at this point. So I hope you guys all enjoy your weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.